Hey, welcome everybody. This is BNP Weekly, episode 79. It is 14th of April, 2020. And once again, we have a visitor within the show. But before we go there, let's actually try to get this properly started always. So let's introduce the show and who we are and then go to the visitors. So welcome everybody. This is the BNP Weekly, where we talk about the latest development and news from the Microsoft and from the community around the Microsoft 365 development, or maybe more specifically the non-Windows areas of the world. My name is Cesar Juvonen. I'm a principal program manager from the OneDrive SharePoint platform team, and with me as a co-host is Waldek. Who are you?
Hi everybody, my name is Waldek Mosegas. I'm head of at Rancor, and today with us is a guest, no one less than Albert Jan Schot. Hi, Albert.
Hi, welcome. Thanks. Nice having me. So, my name is Albert Jan. Most people know me as Epi, so I'll probably be Epi for the rest of the show. I'm CTO at Portiva, and we're a Dutch company focusing on business productivity with Office 365 and a bit of Azure.
That sounds good. How big is the Portiva? How many people are in the company?
We're around 100 people, and most of us focuses on, well, the Office 365 or Microsoft 365 platform. And we're doing, well, mainly business productivity. We do some custom development. We do some adoption. So everything around the business productivity stack.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Well, what's the impact of the current situation for you as a partner, just out of curiosity? So obviously working from home is a thing, but what about from a partner specific perspective?
So what we actually see happening is that we were pretty quick for working from home. I mean, obviously we've got all the stuff in place and we could with a day notice, we could easily switch over to start working from home. What we do see happening is that some of our customers were ready, some weren't. So they were currently making sure that they can actually go to proper channels to make sure everything is working. And, well, it's actually interesting to see that there are customers who are actually facing really, really big problems because of this whole situation. And others are just like, okay, it happens, let's make the most of it. So for us as a partner, we see that some projects were actually dropped, others were started to make sure that we could implement Teams or we could implement a solution to quickly create Teams or collaboration spaces. Yeah. We really love the template you guys have, the crisis communication template. So we've been doing that at some customers. We'd be doing some Power Apps. We'd be doing some Power Automate. So, yeah, it's different, but so far it's interesting to see what's happening. Actually,
And most likely, the situation. Everybody's waiting for when will this situation go away. And sure, it will take a while, but how will the world look like after that? So it's really interesting.
That's an interesting topic to think about because see most of the countries are now postponing or delaying going open again or going full normal. So it's interesting to see how long this will actually take before we go back to a new normal.
There's also this interesting thing, like I think there's a big group that expects like we will get back to where we used to be. Like there will be like, okay, so next week on Monday, like everything is done, we're back to the full thing as it was. But summarize, suspect that it will be like gradually going back to working, but in a different way. And it will be more of a gradual change as opposed to hard cut. Okay, and now we're back, you know?
Yeah.
But this is my God.
I know, Waldek, you're already working from home. Vesa, you're working from home as well. I used to spend around 80% of my time working at clients or visiting clients. Yeah. And now all of a sudden it's like the new normal that you just have your call at 9, start working, and have a few Teams meetings or have multiple Teams meetings throughout the day. It works. And it's interesting to see that once we are allowed to travel again, what's going to be the balance? I don't think I will spend the 80% of my time at clients anymore. For me, it makes more sense to do at least a few days at home. But who knows?
And I think it really forces then companies actually on accepting the fact that, hey, we need to trust the people and we need to figure out alternative ways of not sneaking behind of their back and watching are they actually working, rather measure their actual work and measure their achievements or measure their results in a different ways, which it's actually how it should be, because in any office work, every single person should have a reason why they exist there, right? And therefore, that reason, whatever it is, it should be measurable. So then you can set your expectations and measure, are we actually getting there or not? So, but sure, especially in IT business, this is much more easier because, well, we build stuff typically, or we enable stuff. So
it's different. We talk about stuff.
Yes, we talk about stuff. Yes. Yeah, we don't necessarily do it. No, never mind. now let's get back on the. You're a CTO, so CTO's business is to talk about stuff, not really to do the stuff, right? I'm a principal PM. I'm not allowed to touch code. I'm allowed to talk about stuff. So.
Well, but that is also an interesting thing, right? Because like, if you're tasked to talk about stuff, you can talk about stuff from anywhere, and you could even argue that.
True.
Not needing to physically be at a place allows you to talk even more because you can have single call with the customer here. So geography is no longer an issue, meaning you can be more, or you can do more of these talks or meetings if only the other side is, let's say, convinced that it's also okay to talk through a screen as opposed to like really meet in person.
Definitely.
And if you have the proper video channels, if you have the proper gear, I think it's fine. It gets close to the model where you can actually face-to-face talk to a person. But obviously there are differences. There's some massive differences. But as an example, in my case, I can't remember when I met my manager physically. So probably Ignite, actually. But it's probably going to be more than a year, considering what's now happening, and we will not be meeting face to face. But it doesn't matter, because it's all about making stuff happen and being measured through different channels, and then having those video chats with people. To be fair, right now, one point actually which happened last week, which is interesting, I think it was also public, it's going to be even less on the video meetings, because we got 12 weeks of parental leave in Microsoft, every single employee, which is like, wow, to address the possible, if there's a need for you to stay at home, obviously everybody stays at home, but to concentrate on family and things. And 12 weeks is quite a lot, actually. So interesting to see how it impacts.
But it only proves the impact of it, right? And like, sure, there are folks who choose to, let's say, in a way, stick their head in the sand and do as if it's new normal, like we've been doing that for a long time. But like, if your kids are at home and your partner cannot do their work, or they can do work, then you have to find a way to balance it out, right? Because like, somebody needs to take care of your kids, and ideally you don't want them to sit in front of screen the whole day, so you want to be actively engaged with them, but which requires time, and you cannot be like typing stuff here and then work with your kids there. Like, it doesn't work.
The
like
interruption
that, right? So,
doesn't work like that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. So it makes perfect sense. And I think it's great to see that Microsoft really scales to that and has the bandwidth to offer that, right? Because if you are a startup, small company, like, not everybody has the bandwidth to do it, right? Absolutely. So I think that scale is great, that to see that Microsoft chooses to, you could even say, spend some of their revenue on doing exactly that, like putting people first.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Super proud of that decision. To be fair, I don't have the luxury to be able to actually take advantage of that, but that's a separate discussion. So one of the problems, at least for me, is that a lot of the stuff, and I think a lot of the IT people can relate on this, the stuff what we do feels like a hobby. But then at the same time, you have a lot of things which you deliver for some of the other people. So if you would actually be away for 2 weeks, that would have a catastrophic impact for the other people who are dependent on you to do things, which shouldn't be the case, because there should not be a single point of failure. But there is quite often.
But I guess even then, right, you could say, well, like, if there was really a need for somebody to drop, like, it's like, I think there is difference between somebody is away for a week and they'll be back versus somebody is gone. Because if your team would be now reshuffled, I'm sure that it's exactly as you say, like the whole team wouldn't stop. Like the job of that person who is now gone, they would be reshuffled, remanaged, and then somebody, and then everyone would chip in to do a little bit of like
absolutely.
That person would
absolutely.
Do this. Like, right. So door wouldn't stop. But if there is a temporary thing, I think it's just easier to say, you know what, let's stop for a week than try to reprioritize the whole work of everybody else for a week, because it is just a week. And whether that's a week or 2 weeks, I think it's still, it's not as big. I wanted to get back to what you said about not meeting your manager. There's this interesting thing, because I think that for a big part, like the fact that you are not going to meet him in person is not as important, because you met him in person once in the past.
True. Yeah.
And I had, and I have exactly the same experience when I joined at Rancor. Like I would have my first interview in person, but then I wouldn't see my manager in person for I don't know how long, maybe half a year. But just the first thing, like you want to very much like meet the person, talk to them face to face, because it's just different.
Yeah.
But I guess like nowadays, I see folks getting new jobs, and apparently that's also okay, right? To just do it video, yeah.
We actually got 3 new hires at the beginning of this month.
Yeah, I saw it.
So
yeah.
The only thing that we met them for was to hand them over a laptop and a phone, because, well, at least you need a laptop. But after that, it was like everything else is going to be Teams meetings, and there you go. Good luck. And obviously, that's a shift for both us as a company as well as new people starting. But, well, it's working out pretty okay.
Yeah, we had some new people and engineers joining SPFX team as well. So it's an interesting way of getting new people and then their faces in the screen. So, but I think it's a fair game. So absolutely.
Yeah.
Good. Let's get back on the time before the corona, the before and after. Well, we don't know what's going to happen.
2019. What did I do then?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Time before corona. Like when was it exactly?
Yeah. I can't remember anything from that. If we think about Abby, your history and the, let's say the transition from the on-premises to the cloud, any learnings from your, let's say, previous path? You actually joined through another merger with Portiva, right? And I do know that Waldeck used to work for the previous company as well and building on-premises stuff. But what's your kind of, if you have like 3 to 5 tips for companies looking into transforming to cloud, because they now have to, because the on-premises is right now pretty much gone, as a first effort, what would be the things to concentrate on?
So I started out, and it feels like ages ago, I think it's already 12 years or something like that, started out with SharePoint on-prem 2007 and a bit of 2000.
It was 12 then. So
It's a slightly different time. The biggest thing for me that was like an eye-opener is that back then when you started developing, everything was or had to be Microsoft. So the only way you could actually build something was on a Microsoft virtual machine or running a Microsoft server, running Visual Studio, doing stuff with the DLLs, and it worked. I'm not going to say it was a bad model or a good model. I mean, it worked.
It worked.
It was different. It was different, right?
and the shift now, the thing that I'm still struggling, might not be the right word, but I'm still trying to figure out, is there are so many things you can do nowadays with all those kind of different frameworks that it's really hard to come up with a best practice. And when I started out, it was this 500-page book that explains this is what you should do and this is the best practice. If you don't do this, you're a bad developer. And nowadays, it's like, oh, I can do this in 7 different JavaScript frameworks. What would make sense today? So I really love the open source attitude and the fact that I can do things in different ways. So my biggest tip would be just pick one, and there's not necessarily something that's either better or worse. Pick something, work with it, and at least let your whole company work with the same way or the same code base, and not try to shift it every 3 weeks. There are a few articles out there that explain that, for instance, your front-end framework is something you'll switch out every year. fine, but no more than once a year, because there's no way your developers can handle that. Yeah. Think about doing stuff in the cloud is slightly different than running on-prem, because on-prem you could just say, pull in another server and go ahead. Now you actually have to think about things being throttled or things being used by everyone in the cloud.
What is throttling? What?
What's your five users.
What?
What?
For some reason, throttling thing is quite actual right now. I don't know why.
Yeah.
So that's another one as well. And I think that's basically it. Other than that, things change, but still stay the same, right? You still can build business productivity solutions. You can build your custom applications. And the only change then is either calling the graph or calling a REST endpoint instead of doing DLLs. But it's pretty much the same.
That's actually a really interesting point. So one kind of a point, you mentioned earlier that obviously you do some of the Azure stuff as well, but then business productivity is the core of Portiva. And why is Portiva or your work concentrates on the Microsoft 365 and not only on Azure? What's the added value for Microsoft 365 as a partner?
Oh, that's actually a good
classic question.
So we started out as a company doing only SharePoint stuff, and then we shifted to Office 365, obviously. And it all started with just doing or creating SharePoint sites, making sure they would look pretty, making sure there were some web parts that the end users required for whatever reason, doing stuff with intranet solutions, doing stuff with provisioning solutions, and the basic stuff, right? But what you actually see happening there is that it becomes more and more things running in Azure as well. But the whole Azure platform is that broad and that's complex, where you can do basically anything. So we said we really want to focus on the primary process within our customers, because that's where we have experience, that's where we actually can make a difference. And it's interesting to see that you start out by just doing or building your web parts or building your front end in things like Azure or enabling AI stuff. And then all of a sudden you're also doing infrastructure and you're also doing identity and you're also doing security. And we are not there yet to say we only do Azure or we are going to do Azure like with another 100 people. But you see that the worlds are converging more and more to a cloud first world. So it makes sense to do more with infrastructure, and we'll probably do that. But for now, it's always focused on the primary process within a client.
Yep, makes perfect sense. Yeah, I think that's one of the, if you think about Microsoft, there's the Azure organization, then there's the Microsoft 365 organization. And one of the things what we're still having as what we need to kind of work on is the value proposition for partners on the Microsoft 365. The Azure side of the house, super clear, because hey, it's set of tools. You use them based on whatever is the design and everything else. But what is the value proposition for partner ecosystem in the Microsoft 365? That's the interesting question.
Yes and no. I mean, like, it depends, like, really where you draw the line. Because if you look at Azure, like, if you imagine you would see it as a hierarchy, right? All the way down, there's a VM. So basically a place for you to run your code. But still, like, how you access it. So then you move up, and then you would think about things like web apps, so more paths. Then you would say, okay, but what does this thing do? Where does it store the data? And then you will move up to things like storage, cognitive services, and basically adding features to the applications you build. But they still need to be exposed somewhere. Yep. So, but that leaves you very much in Azure. But then you want to integrate stuff in M365 where customers actually spend their time, because they will not go to, I mean, sure, you could build a web app and that could be their target, but you can say, well, we could go about it two ways. We can ask you to go to this place, or we will come to you. So if you spend your day in Outlook, why not have an Outlook add-in that integrates in the context where you are? If you if you choose to spend your time in Teams, why not have a bot or a personal app, right? So it's basically bringing all the different things you build that have to land somewhere, that operate somewhere in Azure, to the context where the user is, whether that's Outlook, that's Teams, SharePoint, or whatnot, or phone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the same with AI, right? I mean, AI is not going to be, here you've got a model, good luck with it, play around with it. It's going to be, you've got data or you've got a process and you want the results from your model injected into the process that you're working with. Or the content.
Yeah, exactly.
And the process has an entry point, which is a UX. And then that was pretty well put, actually, Waldeck. You can implement your own custom UX, absolutely, in Azure, using then the bits and pieces of Azure. But then you're building everything from scratch rather than integrated in the process.
Exactly. And then there's also this another aspect of it, like processes the way you work, often will touch on an artifact, like a file. Like a user, a contact, and all these things already exist in 365. So why would you build your own CRM? Why would you build your own document repo with checking in files and versioning? You have all of that already. Yeah. So you could see M365 that it brings it, basically raises the bar, allowing you, like offering you a really rich set of features into which you can tap and then build more richer experiences on top of that, as opposed to like reinventing the wheel. Let me upload a file, handle a file, checking out the version. That is already available. Like, move on.
Now, just brainstorming on this exact thought of mind, if you think about, for example, the Windows or let's say an Apple operating system, you don't actually write the file system for those anymore. Because you take advantage of what is actually available.
So
exactly. That's and then that's in the cloud world, that's your OneDrive and a SharePoint, and those are the things where you just store stuff and then magically it's somewhere. Now, should we then start calling Microsoft 365 as a operating system, because it actually provides you a set of services
I think it's very eye-opening when you talk to people who aren't really tech savvy, because to them it's very opaque, like what it is, right? They go to Outlook and they find everything that they need for their work in there.
They go to their intranet. There are people who work in Outlook.
Three, two, one. Teams. Right? So there are folks basically who go to these places and they have everything that they need in there. And basically, like, to them, the same way, like, they don't really care about the OS. They start a laptop and it just works. And they don't really care about, like, everything that's behind the screen, like what is the file system and files, how they're arranged on a disk, like that is irrelevant. And basically the same way here, like at some point, like they will move up the hierarchy. Yeah, exactly. And like, and more of it, like, it's going to be just like, they will just assume that things are there. They are on the phone and they assume they can access the files and an email and messages and it's all there. And where it's coming from, that is irrelevant. Yeah. Right? So you could see it as basically, and I think in a way, I might have heard that on a few occasions, is basically the fabric that spans across your daily work, right? Yeah. It basically underpins your daily work, whether you're on a phone, behind a desk, or on a go or whatnot.
Well, you see that with the latest additions to the stack. I mean, we call it Microsoft 365. You can now do things in the graph that ends up in your Windows 10 timeline. I can install OneDrive and it will sync my photos from iOS to my OneDrive. So it's becoming more and more a full spectrum of services that...
Exactly.
Yeah, like you said, a fabric.
Which is basically what we've been telling for many, many years. But now we're really, really starting to see that in practice. And then the COVID situation is forcing everybody to really kind of embrace it and really go for it. And obviously then that increases the usage of cloud, which then unfortunately causes some level of a throttling because we can't keep up with the capacity which we're working on, and it's getting much better. So there was a small spike a few weeks back, so small one.
Yeah, there was this nice blog post about 1,000% increase of use. Yep. That sounded interesting.
Yeah, I think it was 750 or something.
Yeah.
In certain areas.
It depends how you look at it.
Exactly.
But it's cool because it seems like this dream of every PM to see, like, whoa, the usage spikes. Oh crap, it still spikes.
Exactly. Yeah. No, stop it.
Yeah,
no.
Stop growing.
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge, or interesting. It's a big win, obviously, at the same time, but it's a win with a cause, yeah. And of course, we win with the cost as well. So, it's an interesting world. Nobody could have actually predicted this properly in the previous.
Actually, Bill Gates in 2017, he actually kind of did.
There was multiple people who were basically predicting that something like this will happen. But what is the overall impact?
The good thing is you could actually have
basement full of stuff waiting, but nobody is actually doing that. There are
folks who do, like preppers, like there's a whole community of them apparently. But but I think the interesting thing is that, like, sure, like growth like that is very unique, right? And as you said, like, there's no way to really prep for that because nobody will really spend the money at that scale, like buy things just for them to sit there. But despite the, let's say, some decreased experience for a little bit of time, like, in a way, I have the confidence that if there is a company that is able to pull it off, like to sustain growth at that scale over time, Microsoft is that company.
Yeah.
Because if this change is here to stay, like, sure, at some point the growth will decline and it will not be as steep anymore.
Yep.
But then Microsoft, I have the confidence that Microsoft will be able to raise the bar and offer service at that level using the quality that we had in the past.
Yeah.
And obviously, so some of this, even some of the growth, the growth might actually go slightly down whenever the situation is resolved. Because right now, a lot of this growth, well, not most of it, but a lot of the growth definitely is coming also from EDU. Yeah. Because EDU basically is free, and then every single school is now in remote schooling. And our kid is in the second grade, but they already have virtual classes and all of that stuff. So mainly still homeschooling, which is, I'm the math teacher. So an English teacher. I'm not sure with the Finglish accent, but so whenever the schools will get to a more normal status, and which eventually will happen, that will mean that the EDU will actually slightly go down, most likely. But then at the same time, now the schools have then the skills and knowledge of using this tooling, whatever is their chosen tooling, because there's obviously Google is offering similar kind of EDU packages and many, many others as well. But they now have then the readiness of doing remote stuff as well, which is good. So as a forced readiness, but still. So, and I was actually listening, there was a video meeting this morning. I'm taking responsibility of the five first hours of the day, and then we'll switch between the wife so we can actually balance out the work. I was sitting on the dining table and listening how the teacher was actually presenting and teaching. And then there was their second grade, so they're 8 year old. And there was a one guy who said his name on the chat. So, blah, 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 your turn to talk. And then, so this and this tool, what we're using, I'm not going to name any names. So this isn't as good as the other one. So can we actually switch on X and Y and Z?
That's always good.
But I mean, in a way, you can see that you can see analogies between our work. Like, we are the same way. Hey, this framework isn't as good. I've seen this other framework. Can we switch? And then you're like, I'm just trying to do my job. I don't want to switch frameworks every other week.
Exactly. And the teacher is just trying to concentrate on teaching, not about the tooling.
Which
is a good
reminder. Don't move my cheese.
Exactly. We just got this to work. Anyway, so that was just interesting. Also, obviously, seeing this young people who are completely native, digi natives, because they're just carrying the tablets and everything. They know everything by heart.
It just works, right? Like, they swipe, and like the files are there. There's like, save a file. What do you mean save it?
Yes, exactly. Well, exactly. The most kind of interesting thing that reminded me, and let's get back on the articles in a second, but it reminded me on the weekend, we had a Eastern weekend, a long weekend. There was few shows which they were broadcasting live because, well, they were set to broadcast live, but there was no audience. And the most amazing thing for digital natives is actually the fact that, is this happening now? What? This is really happening now. Wow. It's not a video because they're so used to YouTube and everything
stream,
else.
Yeah.
Everything is video. And it's like, really? They're, where are they? Well, they're in a studio in whatever location. Wow, that's amazing.
It's never live. It's never live, right? Because like it's like the one thing that I find really odd. Like, for example, the New Year's Eve show. It's recorded 2 weeks earlier. And you're like, hold on, and now they're doing as if it was midnight and like toasting. You're like, what? It's not live. Exactly. It's like they've done it like 2 weeks back, like pretending as if. Yeah. Well,
okay. I haven't heard about that one, but
really?
No, it's not typical, in that
like, old. Yes. Yeah. Like yes, yeah. Totally.
Okay. Central totally. Europe is.
Maybe it's a Dutch thing.
And maybe.
I don't think so. I don't think so because why would the actors be at midnight in a studio or like the. People like they also have a home and kids and family and friends.
Fair point.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Okay. On that bombshell, let's move to the articles. Let's get back on a
chit-chat. New Year's Eve, Vessa, like 5 to midnight. Hey, Vessa, I cannot install Office. Can you help me? And you're like, no.
Related on digital natives, this one was the big one. And I think. From yesterday, wasn't it? Yeah, on Monday, and they basically finally came out from Microsoft Teams, and that we're finally getting the 3x3 screens. And yes, we know that 3x3 isn't the end goal. We know we want to go to the 27x27 or whatever it is. So everybody will have.
They actually said, I think someone said that at some point we'll be able to see all. I mean, sure, there will be a limit eventually at some point, but it's going to be like this is not the end stuff.
Yeah, definitely not. Definitely not. But it's a start of getting from the 4 screens to the 9 and then more and more after that. So that's pretty cool.
On a related note,
Sorry?
That means that we can do a SharePoint at some point.
No, that is true.
Yes.
Classic SharePoint. Yes.
On related note, I don't think that we have an announcement for that, but there was also an announcement that the custom backgrounds in Teams calls are rolling out as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Vesta, I know you've used it on a few occasions with a virtual cam, right?
I've used the virtual back. I've used the background. The background actually works better than the virtual cameras. So
yeah, okay, but I mean, you are at Microsoft, so you have the inner ring, and you are ahead of the game, and you're like you're not like normal people.
Yeah, it's my device, so I can just turn it on, and it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
The thing that I wanted to ask you about, like, how do you guys feel about it? Because to me, it's like, okay, it's here, but I've never really had the need for it. But I wonder, like, how do you guys feel about it? Windows XP, there you go.
For me, it feels like a fun gimmick. I mean, it's not probably something that's going to change my life or something. But yeah. I can imagine that I have calls, and now I just turn on the blur effect. But I can imagine that there are calls where you might not want to show your room or wherever you're sitting. And then it's fairly easy to flip on, make it look something different. And maybe blur isn't giving you the effect because blur, like it says, it blurs your background. So maybe if there's a lot of clutter, it doesn't look really nice if you blur it. And then you can pick a nice picture and it looks okay. I mean, yeah, for me, it makes some sense.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. And there was plenty of out-of-the-box images, at least in my side, which I wasn't aware. There's a new set of images, apparently, which are rolling out as well. Because there was only 3 images or 5 images out-of-the-box recently, and these are...
There are now, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 24.
Well.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, there are some tweets out there how you can upload your own images. They're in the data folder, so it's not too hard.
You can definitely do that. And you can definitely do this things. Now we're super small on the by the way, because we're recording the screen sharing, so nobody can see what we're actually showing here, but that's fine.
Anyways.
Anyway. Now, okay, so other things, just to mention, share videos and engage with audiences, use Microsoft Stream and SharePoint from Sebastian Voiland. He's from Experiences PM team, as I am. And basically, it's just the fact that we have a better stream web port, and you can actually do a recordings, meeting recordings with your coworker remotely by adding that there as well. So there's a original blog post in here, which is then pointing to another location from Sebastian, but basically additional details on how things work. So really cool. Announcing Microsoft 365 community docs. This one went live last week. And this actually is a work what we've done with Mark DeAnderson for a long time. We started collecting non-dev documentation and articles already more than a year ago. And the intention was all the time to get it out in the docs.microsoft.com. And now then we actually internally aligned with our Marvel team, which might sound weird, but it's nothing related on the Marvel Studios, but it's a whatever where the name is coming from. And they're basically responsible of the documentation process. And now we're fully in sync, and we basically have a first set of people who contributed their articles in this non-dev side of the house, which is really, really cool. So getting there, and we'll do a similar kind of a monthly summary on what has been released starting from next month. So should be really cool.
Nice.
Now, this one came out earlier today, yesterday, actually. You've been working on it. Monday was a vacation day in Netherlands. You should not work on that.
Just because the date says April 13, it doesn't mean that it came out on April 13. Never trust whatever is on the internet.
Yeah, true as well. I think it came out today. So
yes,
yeah, correct. You started writing that yesterday. That's what it is, actually, probably.
Actually, so it wasn't the me. It's done by the team. Hungaria, actually.
Okay. Anyway. But this is really around getting started with Office 365 CLI and PowerShell. I think it's a combination of running these two things, right? What's the story behind of this?
The idea is like, imagine that you are either on a Mac or in a cloud or even on Windows, and you want to use PowerShell Core. And you want to use that to manage your tenant. Like currently, yes. CLI is the only option because that's the only thing that currently works on PowerShell Core. And soon that will change. But for now, if you need something today, now, like, that is the only option. And surprisingly, even on Windows, we see majority of our users in CLI to actually run things in PowerShell. So that is also an interesting fact, like, because like if you think about it, in Bash, everything's string. In PowerShell, everything is an object that you can more easily parse, iterate through, and so forth, and so on. So Bash is really, like, depending on what you want to do, Bash might not be the best experience, and PowerShell, especially PowerShell Core, which is available now on every OS, that basically raises the bar and offers you to do more in terminal. So,
combining best of both worlds, so to say.
Exactly. And also empower everybody, no matter whether you are on Windows, Linux, on a Mac, or on your box or in a cloud, you have the same experience. You can run scripts. You can run the same script in CI, CD on Linux, which is often more effective or more efficient than Windows. So just like having a cohesive story across the board.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, announcing Microsoft Graph Toolkit 1.2 with new Microsoft Teams Channel Picker component from Elias Young. So that's really cool. And they started a new blog post series, right? Yeah, this one. Yeah. Announcing a lap around Microsoft Graph Toolkit blog series. Really, really important thing. And great that the Graph team is actually doing this, because the fact that you're shipping a software doesn't mean that people are using it. So getting the real usage comes from the fact that you do blogging and a set of articles where you explain how to take advantage of these things. So super, super important. And great to see a list of familiar names in the writers in here as well.
Yeah.
Now,
I like the fact how it was announced, and I'm not sure in which article or where it was, but basically they wrapped the whole thing up with like one line of code to call Graph. And I was Yes, that is basically it. Like, you put like one line on your page and it does the auth data retrieval, render, like everything's in there already. It saves you so much time, not to mention like taking away the burden of going through the auth, right? Yeah. So it's like really like whenever you want to do anything which is in graph, like this is the place to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, and this one was remote working trends meetings. So this one is a really nice article from Jared Spataro, and basically a summary on what are we seeing on the usage and growth and everything else. We're not going to deep dive in here from a timing perspective, but basically how the world changes within the world have been impacting the growth of the usage. And these charts are pretty interesting as well. So
little bubble,
160 million,
bigger bubble.
Bigger bubble.
The biggest bubble.
Some people really like bubbles, but they are cute from sizing. And now it's getting here. My SharePoint stack, Mohammed Hassan's blog, working with SharePoint Online Modern Multilingual with the search keyword language and how to make those things work in a modern SharePoint web part. Nice articles on that one. So good combination of information and details. And this one is really cool from Joe Mendes. React My Personal Apps. Brilliant implementation and a really cool here we can see actually my personal apps web part which extends or is natively responsive, and then you can actually configure what are the things what you want to have visible on your personal apps. So what kind of rendering, and it uses a lot of the SPFX controls which are have been releasing all of that. So really cool,
very rich. Yeah It's like very nice experience. Like there's no like type JSON string in here. No, it's all UI settable and draggable. You can set it up basically being a user and not a dev.
Works as a personal app as well, which is pretty cool. So really, really cool stuff. So Microsoft Teams personal app. So you can actually then store your most accessed links directly in Teams as a personal app. That's actually a pretty cool idea.
So basically it's your quick launch in a way.
Yes. Kind of in Teams. Now
everywhere.
There is a favorites functionality in browser, but okay. So there's a Teams desktop. This would be our then quick launch on the left menu as an example. Cool idea. Really cool idea. Good. Moving on to things. Script to update metadata term instances in all SharePoint documents and folders from Joel Rodriguez. So just again, good set of scripts and explaining how things are working. So using PMP PowerShell. So let's not deep dive on things from a timing perspective. We had a lot of articles. People seem to have more time to write nowadays.
That's good.
Yes, that is absolutely good. Gautam Seth, how to integrate PMP SPFX React control inside of the property bank controls data control. So really cool side of as well, how to really take advantage of the PMP SPFX controls in the Teams or SharePoint implementation. This one was an Outlook adding with SharePoint framework, store custom metadata within your mail. Really cool setup from Marcus Miller. And this is, so this is a multi-part series, and this is the last part where we basically then finalize the sample, and this is really around storing the emails in SharePoint using an application in the Outlook Web Access. So really cool stuff, and using Graph, of course. So easiest way to access the data. Access Microsoft Graph API using SPFX with secured Azure function. So really cool stuff from HS Hussain. So again, explanation, a lot of details on the blog post on how to make things happen, which is really good. The only downside, obviously, with pictures is that they get outdated so fast because we keep on evolving UX so fast in Azure.
Stop changing the UI.
Exactly. Jarpas Forst from Valo Intranet, quick tip, understanding the unknown user issue in Microsoft Teams. So understanding what is the unknown user, how does it actually work, and how do I get to that. So good information as well. Exploring taxonomy mapping in a PMP transformation. This is basically when we are transforming classic SharePoint pages to a modern SharePoint experiences, you can do this taxonomy mapping in between. And it's really cool. So Boyle Bullock has been one of the, let's say, principal writers of these capabilities, the transformation capabilities. And I think he was the one who wrote from SharePoint 2010, publishing pages transform to the modern pages using the existing APIs from BERT. So really, cool. Really cool stuff.
That is
because
cool.
Then again, transform from 2010 to the cloud. And that's pretty cool. SharePoint framework, facelift of dropdowns within Office UI Fabric icons from Nandeep. Really cool stuff as well. So how to use those icons. How do I install multiple node versions on my Windows computer? Quite important as well from Patrick Lambert. Because you might be running multiple versions, and NVM is probably the easiest way to make that happen. Sure, using a Docker would be one option, but it might get problematic. But NVM absolutely works.
Lifesaver.
Absolutely, absolutely. Using Teams Live Meeting for your virtual events, nice summary on how to get started on using things, a non-dev topic, definitely, but really, really important that how to take advantage of this. And then from Elio, building a PC light to show your Microsoft Teams presence. That's actually pretty cool. And using the presence graph APIs, right?
Exactly, yes.
The only downside is that cable in his setup, but hey.
That could be a battery.
Yeah, yes. Wow, and then we have four different videos. So adding multiple web parts to SPFX solution, basics. But again, basics are the ones where people need. So it's really good that these kind of videos are actually being done, because when you search, how do I do this? It's good to have a video or an article, how to make this happen from people join. Paolo had a new video as well, working with PMP.js and files. And one of the things what people noticed that he has actually had a haircut. So I think that was Waldeck's comment as well. So SPFX, jQuery, all carousel. But it's good that people are noticing. And how to write a SPFS jQuery over carousel web part, quite typical setup for what people are asking. And then a final video from John Liu related on how to schedule a Microsoft Teams meeting with anyone at any time. So that's pretty cool as well, using the Microsoft Automate, Power Automate, not Microsoft Automate, Power Automate.
Power Automate.
Power Automate. Whatever
build,
it's called.
Build a flow. Use Power Automate to build a flow that schedules a meeting. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, let me actually stop the screen sharing, and now we can play with the backgrounds so I can actually get something fancy here.
Looks like I'm in the office now.
I can be in the office as well. Contemporary office. There you go.
I can be in the Microsoft office as well. So there we go. So
you are there with Jax, right?
Yeah, Jax is over there, and there's Ed, who's my manager, and Jeremy Kelly, who owns our Graph APIs, the SharePoint, the OneDrive Graph APIs. And I think Steven is there as well. Luca is missing from this meeting. So,
hey, we can be at the same place.
Oh, we can? Okay.
Yeah.
Good, good. So what's happening with this week? Any changes, or is it a Groundhog Day? Groundhog Day? Just repeating.
Well, we lost Monday, so
exactly.
I think the rest of the week is just catching up of losing a day.
That is true.
For some reason, I still got emails from clients. I still have things that I want to figure out. There's still community stuff to build. So So it's probably going to be a catch-up week, but
yeah, and we lost Friday last week as well, right?
Yeah,
that was off in Netherlands as well.
Yeah.
Lost.
Yeah. Lost. What does it mean? Yeah, that's true.
So I enjoyed my garden and some beer.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
Any good beer hints? What would be your favorites? Let's go off the topic.
Beers. Usually
I heard that Netherlands has a good or Dutch beer. No. Belgian beers.
Belgian beers.
Okay, fine.
Almost the same, but
No.
We're not allowed to say that.
No.
Good. Anything else? What you guys are going to work on this week?
Well, yeah, so on the CLI front, we will keep going. We have still plenty. So we have just done a release, new preview with additional reports, additional commands. And I think we have still, like, I don't know how many PRs to go, and probably we'll get some more PRs. Yeah, there you go. So there is always like more work than hours in a day, which in a way is great. It's great to be in a place where there's always something new for us to ship, to show. There are still some things that we need to address or we can address. So that is, I like that. I like the fact that, and also the fact that we get so much help from everyone else. Like that is really, really the best part of working on CLI. If you ask me.
So on that one, and I know that we're running out of time, but in a few minutes, we should actually make a proper show and talk about that one, the learnings around the open source projects. And obviously CLI is a really good example. It took a long time to stuff get moving, but now it's actually moving really nicely. And there's multiple people who are coordinating the work, and there's tens and tens of people contributing. Any learnings from your side on the running the open source projects in a few minutes?
It's very much rinse and repeat. You need to show up every week, and it's very much it's exactly the same no matter what you build, and it's very the atypical thing that developers do. When you build something for someone, you need to communicate to the point where you feel like I am repeating myself and everybody knows. No. Like I live and breathe CLI. Everybody else don't. Everybody else has their full-time job, and maybe they will see a tweet. Maybe they will hear about us talk about it. Maybe they will see a post, but typically they won't. Just because that is on top of my head doesn't make it on top of anyone else's head. So I need to, and basically that is the message also for us as a team who manages that, rinse and repeat, like really repeat the basic. Explain why, explain what it solves, what problem it solves, because we know this, nobody else does. And it's a long game. Like you need to think about not days and weeks, but really months and years.
So I actually had a colleague, he's been doing Office 365 for ages. He got a Mac, I think 2 or 3 months ago. And last week he was like, yeah, I want to do this, but I cannot run PowerShell. And I was like, there's CLI, you can do that it's been out there. But and he was like, oh, never heard of it. And I showed him, How haven't you heard of it? I mean,
and but it's one of those things where we And definitely we'll schedule a separate talk and talk about those things. But we saw the same thing also with everything else on the BMP side of the house. So the BMP PowerShell, BMP SiteScore. BMP PowerShell is an awesome example. It took years to catch on. And now it's de facto way of manipulating everything. And the usage is just millions and millions and millions of command executions in every single day. It's just mind-blowing. Or the same actually applies even for SharePoint Framework, which isn't open source, but again, rinse and repeat. To be able to make stuff available, you need to rinse and repeat and make it in front of everybody's face all the time so that people understand the value out of it, that they are willing to commit the time to actually spend on learning it. And now it moves nicely. So
exactly, but also very much explain the basics. How do I get it? How do I start it? How do I do auth? How do I update it? Like really the simple things, but like often turn out to be the most complex things at all. Like I work in PowerShell maybe once every two months. Like basically, like every time, okay, like my commandlets are from 3 months back. How do I update them? Yep. I don't know. Yep. I have basically a OneNote tab where I have all the commands, but it's not like update this. No, it's like you have to do this with this argument. Like it's a complex thing.
Yep.
Right? It's like, and if you don't do it every day or every week, like you will not remember that because it's not intuitive. Yep. And it just like proves like a point like, the basics, rinse and repeat, right? Yeah. So there will be one, two.
We rang out of time.
No, but it's like also another thing that is important is that you need to get things out of your head. Like you need to help others to help you. So everything from planning, ideas, communication, it cannot be in your head. As much as you'd love to code, if you want others to help you, you need to spend even more time on getting out the to-do list or the things you'd like to see changes. Because think about it. Okay. If I don't know the project and I have an hour off, I can spend the hour to go through your code and then by the time I can help, the time is gone. Yep. Or I will see exactly I can help in this area and I will do exactly that. And by the end of the hour, you have a PR.
Yeah, but it's the same with the SP dev docs, right? There is this really large button saying make an edit. So if you spot a typo, it's just click the button, fix the typo, and you're done. And it's the same effort as reporting an issue, saying on this page there is something wrong, as then to fix it yourself. It's the same with the CLI. If I want to work on a new command, there is this nice format that states you need to do this, you need to implement that. And for the basic commands, it takes like an hour, maybe two, to implement your very first command. And that really is helpful to get you started.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now we're running out of time because Abby has a commitment right now. So thank you, Abby, for that one. And thank you, Walek, once again.
Thank you, Asa.
We'll come up with a new BNP Weekly within a week. And sorry for those, by the way, who were waiting this to go live on Tuesday. It doesn't. It goes live on Wednesday because
Monday
was off. It's Tuesday now.
Yes.
So, but thank you, Abby. Thank you, Walek.
Thanks
and
for
we'll come
me.
Back with a new one. Yeah. Thanks. We'll definitely bring you in the future as well. See you
Cool. See
next week.
Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.